The placebo effect has been known to doctors and research scientists for decades, but lately something strange has been happening that's thrown the pharmaceutical industry into something of a tizzy. An increasing number of new medications are failing to beat sugar pills in clinical trials. On today's second underreported segment, we'll try to learn why. And joining me now is Steve Silberman, a senior writer for Wired magazine. His article on this phenomenon appeared in its August issue, and we have provided a link to it on our show page. Steve, welcome back to our show.
Oh, thanks so much. It's great to be here again.
Have scientists ever figured out why taking a dummy pill can have a therapeutic effect for some patients?
Well, they're just beginning to figure that out now. A long time ago, the placebo effect was considered to be just a psychological thing. Like, basically, people who were gullible or neurotic would be given a sugar pill by a doctor and would think that they were getting better. However, now, because of brain imaging studies and other kinds of neurological investigations, scientists have figured out that the placebo effect is very, very real. And basically, if you take any kind of pill, whether it's a real drug or a sugar pill in a clinical trial, that initiates a cascade of chemicals through your brain and body that actually do things like suppress inflammation or reduce respiration or accelerate healing. So the placebo effect is not just some kind of psychological phenomenon related to, just what you think. It actually does produce healing for certain kinds of disorders.
Although not everything. I can't imagine a placebo shrinking a tumor.
No, absolutely not. And it's very, very important to be aware of the fact that the placebo effect is not some kind of miracle or faith healing process that can help, with every kind of disorder. But with certain kinds of disorders, particularly mood disorders like depression or even Parkinson's disease, many digestive disorders like Crohn's disease, the placebo effect can really, really help.
In fact, you write about a study at Harvard Medical School that was conducted last year into treatment of irritable bowel syndrome.
Yes,
what happened
absolutely.
There?
Yeah, basically, they divided the patients into two groups, and one group got a kind of therapy that didn't involve much emotional support, you could say, delivered by a clinician who was rather cold and business only. And then another group got a lot of emotional support from the clinician, and the clinician was curious about their condition, expressed optimism about their recovery. And the people in that group, even though both groups received fake therapy, the people in the group that got more basically emotional support did better, and they did better for a long time. One of the misconceptions that the pharmaceutical companies have had is that the placebo effect is very short-lived, but actually it can last for months on end.
So that was a psychological effect. Would that work as well with a real drug?
Well, what's interesting is that the guy who really brought the placebo effect to the fore in medicine was a guy named Henry Beecher.
And how long ago was that?
Well, he was an anesthetist from Harvard who actually served with the troops in World War II in the Battle of Anzio. And the way that he really discovered the placebo effect was that a soldier got wounded and the morphine was running low because they were under heavy German bombardment. And so a nurse actually lied to this wounded soldier, told him that she was giving him a shot of morphine when she was only giving him a shot of salt water. However, much to Beecher's amazement, the soldier's inflammation subsided and his pain subsided, and he did much better. And Beecher realized that this would be a very good way to test the effectiveness of new drugs. If you divided the volunteers into two groups, one who got the new drug and one who got the placebo, then in a sense both groups, he found out, would experience some placebo effects from receiving the drugs. But obviously if the drug was better, then the group that got the real drug would do better. What's happening now, though, that's so interesting, is that in the last few years, for some set of unknown reasons, although I talk about some of the possible reasons in my article, the placebo effect in clinical trials appears to be rising worldwide. And that's a very interesting thing, and it's of great import to the pharmaceutical companies because they spend hundreds of millions of dollars developing these new drugs. And if they fail in a late-stage trial, which is a global production with thousands of volunteers, that could be a huge hit on their bottom line. So the pharmaceutical companies are now collaborating on a huge data sharing project to try to figure out why the placebo effect appears to be rising worldwide.
By 20% in some tests, you say.
Yeah, that's true. More and more drugs are failing. And, you know, it's interesting. There were two studies that really just came out today that have fascinating resonance with my article. One of them is that most of the it's a Reuters study done with the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration that found that most drugs, mental health drugs, basically psychotropic drugs like antidepressants, stimulants, drugs for ADHD, are prescribed by family doctors, not by psychiatrists. And basically, family doctors have taken over the job of attending to these mood disorders. And that may be one of the problems that the pharmaceutical companies are running into, is that the placebo effect is very robust for mood disorders like depression. And for the last 15 years, they have focused more and more and more on not only developing new drugs for mood disorders, but extending their patents by repatenting drugs, say, for depression. They'll repatent it for something like social anxiety disorder. And so these are mental disorders that are being treated by family doctors who are not specialists in dealing with emotional disorders.
Well, but drug companies are reliant on placebos, aren't they? Before placebos were introduced into the testing regime, things were a lot more iffy. Are the pharmaceuticals caught in a bind here? They need the placebos, and yet they don't want them to do as well as they're doing?
Well, yes, that's true. I mean, the testing against placebo is the gold standard of medicine. Nearly every drug that we take these days has been tested against placebos at some point in their development. And so the pharmaceutical companies can't get rid of placebos. But what they need to do is they need to understand what elements of a clinical trial contribute to this placebo effect. And basically, they need to understand why the promise of care and the promise of healing exerts such a powerful physical effect in our body. We're learning that basically our brains have more control over certain aspects of our health than we previously believed.
My guest is Steve Silberman, senior writer for Wired magazine. His article, Placebos Are Getting More Effective, Drug Makers Are Desperate to Know Why, is available on our show page at WNYC.org. Direct-to-consumer advertising of medications has been allowed by the FDA since 1997, and on many TV shows, it feels like every other commercial is for one medication or another. Is part of the rise in the placebo effect, do you think, linked to the increased marketing of pills? Because marketing has been credited with people sometimes requesting name-brand medications instead of generics, which are shown to be just as effective.
That's absolutely true. And in fact, there have been controlled studies where a placebo that is presented as a name brand drug like Tylenol the patients feel better when they take it, even though all they're taking is a sugar pill. And that is definitely one of the things that the pharmaceutical companies are thinking about in terms of what may be contributing to this mysterious rise in the placebo effect, because particularly in the U.S., we've been bombarded with these messages through direct-to-consumer advertising that the way to deal with things like social anxiety or, you know, simply not feeling happy is to get a prescription for an antidepressant. And antidepressants have now become one of the largest, if not the largest, classes of drugs in the U.S. And what's interesting is that if you do a meta-analysis of hundreds of antidepressant studies, you find out that they're only marginally more effective than placebo. And many antidepressants have to be run through even 8 or 10 trials before they can beat placebo twice, which is what's required for FDA approval. And I'm not saying that to dismiss antidepressants. People who are very, very depressed can really benefit from them. I'm just saying that for mildly depressed people, things like exercise and therapy can be equally effective, as studies have shown. And yet, because the drug companies want us to become dependent on their products, they bombard us with these messages.
Well, let's make that a little clearer. There is a danger in talking about this because some people who really need their medications, people who have serious problems, bipolar, diabetic, whatever, might think that a placebo is just as good, then why bother taking their meds?
Right, and that's absolutely wrong. That is absolutely wrong, and I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, and in fact, they can be life-saving, and I have many friends whose lives have been turned around by taking antidepressants.
But when you talked about the clinical trials on psychological drugs, hasn't the industry had trouble finding people who aren't already medicated? There are even traces of many of the chemicals in a drinking water.
Another factor that may be contributing to this rise in the placebo effect is that, in part because Americans are so heavily medicated, clinical trials have been offshored in the last 10 years or so, where they can find populations of eager volunteers who are not already medicated for several disorders. However, the problem is that if you have groups of very poor people in, say, India or Africa or China or the former Soviet Union, people who don't even have access to basic medical care usually, then when they come into a clinical trial, get all this care, the placebo effect can be even more intense for them. So that may be one of the other elements that's contributing to this apparent rise of the placebo effect in trials.
Even the size and color of the sugar pill can change results.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Red pills are more stimulating. Blue pills are generally more soothing and calming, unless you're an Italian male who associates the color blue with the national soccer team.
Now, researchers are also finding that even established antidepressant medications like Prozac are faltering against placebos in follow-up tests. Do you think we're building up immunity to these drugs, or do you think that if these drugs were vetted today, the FDA might not approve them?
Well, that's one of the questions that the drug companies are going to be looking into. I don't think that we're becoming immune to medications. I think some other complex set of things is going on, many of which I talk about in the article. But, that's a very interesting question as to whether or not drugs that are already on the market would be able to pass the FDA now. And that's one of the things that the pharmaceutical companies are looking into with a big project called the Placebo Response Drug Trial Survey that I talk about in the article.
It could be very embarrassing to them. Has the industry tried to hide the beneficial effects of placebos?
Well, in a sense, I wouldn't say, it's not like you can run out to the drugstore or the health food store or something and buy things that are labeled placebos and then convince yourself that, they're just as good as drugs. In order for a placebo to work, basically, it has to be given to you by someone like a doctor. You can't know that it's a placebo, and you have to believe that this pill is really going to help you and improve your health. So if you know that what you're taking is a placebo, it won't work as well.
I was thinking, Steve, about copywriting the name and then running commercials during 60 Minutes for placebo.
Right.
Works better than the drug you're using, and it's a lot cheaper, and we don't have to run all of those things about side effects during this commercial.
Yeah, I know. Well, the other study of the two studies I was referring to earlier is actually relevant to that, because a study just came out in a journal called Gastroenterology. Basically, a lot of kids with digestive disorders that are very painful are being treated with antidepressants off-label by their pediatrician, which means that it's not an approved use of antidepressants, but the pediatricians are giving it to the kids anyway. The problem is that this new study shows that kids who take placebos get just as much benefit, but without the considerable side effects of the antidepressants for curing pain. And so that's one of those studies that points to the fact that we really have to understand what the placebo effect is about physically after dismissing it as this kind of psychological thing related to fake pills for so long.
Well, they have a positive effect on brain chemistry, and that would contribute to the release of positive chemicals that are already in our body.
Absolutely, like opioids and dopamine. And in fact, one of the interesting things that I came upon in researching the article is that Parkinson's patients who receive a kind of therapy called deep brain stimulation, which is the administering of very low voltage electricity through electrodes.
Ten seconds, Steve. Sorry.
Well, never mind. But anyway,
read the article, and you can read it on our website at WNYC.org. Thank you so much, Steve Silberman, senior writer for Wired Magazine.
A pleasure, Leonard. Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, Yitzhak Perlman and his wife Toby discuss an upcoming performance of chamber music at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And then journalist Amy Bach examines the widespread problems and failures that plague our criminal justice system. Also, we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Twilight Zone, and our latest Please Explain is all about migration. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Neshek, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from contributing producer Virginia Doris. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.